Welcome to This Just In, the show bringing you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. And now, for the fastest voice in healthcare, here's your host, Justin Barnes.
Thank you for tuning in, and welcome to This Just In. I'm your host, Justin Barnes. In these segments, I'll bring you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. As always, we're broadcasting from the This Just In studios on the Business Radio X network, as well as the Healthcare Now radio network. For this episode, my 220 episode, I'm very excited to announce that we're broadcasting the This Just In show again live from the HIMSS 21 annual conference, Wednesday, August 11th in Las Vegas, starting at 9:30 a.m. Pacific from booth 3700. So please join us in person if you're going to be at the annual conference. And if not, then please be sure to tune in at thisjustinradio.com or at healthcarenowradio.com. It's going to be a great annual conference. Hopefully you're planning on attending. Some great speaker lineup. So I'm personally excited to be there. I know many thought leaders across the industry are as well. We've had a great series of segments of speakers from HIMSS and planners of HIMSS who have been on the show over the past couple of months. So a lot of great content been shared, but I could not be more excited. I think this is going to be my 22nd HIMSS. Not in a row, but going for 22 out of probably 27 years. So very excited for HIMSS annual conference in August in Las Vegas. But without any further ado, we have a very special return guest today, Jeff Coughlin, Senior Director of Government Relations from the HIMSS organization. Welcome back to the show, my good friend.
Hello, Justin. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you're always, I'm always excited when you're my guest. You're a very frequent participant, usually in person at either one of the think tanks that I host or at the annual conference each year. So thank you for coming back always. You're great.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So first, where are you calling in from today?
So I am calling in from Arlington, Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C. I actually live about 2 miles from our HIMSS office in the Washington, D.C. area. So I'm very fortunate to have one of the shortest commutes in Washington, D.C.
That's awesome. And where are you from originally? A little background there.
So I grew up just north of Boston in a small town called North Reading, Massachusetts, about 20 minutes north of Boston. Came down to Virginia for grad school and never left.
Okay. Wow. So I guess I didn't realize you're from Boston. We've been friends for a long time. I'm from Amherst, Mass originally. So it's kind of ironic.
I think I remember talking to you about that.
Okay. So cool.
The other side of the state.
You got it. So how long have you been with HIMSS?
So I've been with HIMSS about 7.5 years at this point. And, I've always worked in government relations. So we have, begun over the past couple of years to focus not only on U.S. public policy, but also kind of think about public policy more globally.
Right.
So it's been kind of a nice evolution of some of the things and how we think about public policy development across the globe.
Yeah, you're always, that's why you're one of the most exciting guests that I have. And I'm always so fortunate to have you because your perspective is spot on for what we're doing here, but also how we affect other parts of the world and also how we integrate with other parts of the world and how we can support them and how they can support us. So it's always a great, time. So kind of diving in from that, again, I think you've been my guest for 6, 7, 8 times, and I'm sure, but it's always great to have you on air and in with me. What government announcements should we be looking out for over the next couple of months? What's going to be hot here?
Yeah. So I think one of the big things that we just learned about a couple weeks ago from Mickey Tripathi, the new National Coordinator for Health IT, and made an announcement at a recent meeting that ONC was progressing forward on further development of the Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement, so the TEFCA implementation.
Yep.
Folks will remember 2018, 2019 timeframe. TEFCA was a very hot topic, under the tutelage of Don Rucker and team.
Yes.
There were several opportunities to comment on TEFCA. TEFCA is the voluntary network that was created as a part of the Hi-Tech Act and, about 21st Century Cures Act. And there are several opportunities to comment on TEFCA and the development of TEFCA. But after those initial comment opportunities, ONC kind of took that information back, and we haven't heard a lot about TEFCA in the past couple of years. So it's pretty exciting that Mickey Tripathi kind of announced that this summer we would be seeing some kind of timelines and milestones around TEFCA implementation. So I don't think that we are going to see kind of a draft of the common agreement or another draft of the Qualified Health Information Network Technical Framework this summer. But I do think that we will get a better kind of indication on what sort of timelines we will be looking at in terms of ONC providing more details about what their thinking is and and where stakeholders can help.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that's kind of a big thing. I also will say that some of the other things that we're waiting for relate kind of to information blocking and to the work that ONC is doing in partnership with the HHS Office of Inspector General on information blocking. So there is a final rule that's expected probably in the next couple months on the civil money penalty regulation that's going to talk about kind of enforcement of information blocking for health IT developers, health information networks, and health information exchanges. So I'm sure that we'll touch on information blocking a little later in the show, but this is kind of, a big milestone for the community as we kind of at the enforcement stage of information blocking and what they can expect and what the kind of the rules of the road are there.
Excellent, because many of us are looking forward to that, you know, this data needs to flow. It fuels, you know, it fuels our healthcare system. And, you know, we need this data moving. So this is exciting. Great.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Excellent. Any other key points?
So I'll just chime in with one more piece of kind of information blocking. So I only mentioned three of the regulated actors that actually that are covered from the civil money penalty side. So again, health IT developers, health information network, health information exchanges are all covered by the civil money penalty, you know, which could be up to $1 million per violation of the information blocking provisions. So the fourth kind of regulated actor is healthcare providers. They're not covered by the CMPs. They are going to be they are going to have appropriate disincentives. And I was just making air quotes, which doesn't really on a podcast, but the appropriate disincentives. How those are defined, how those are rolled out is something that we will get more information from the Office of Inspector General in conjunction with ONC, likely in conjunction with other HHS agencies, probably in the next several months as well. This is going to be the proposed rule, so there'll be the opportunity to comment, and then it will move through kind of the broader regulatory process. But that kind of completes the entire four of the regulated actors in terms of how they can be thinking about the enforcement of information.
Sure. Wow. Okay. I didn't even know that last part. So it's certainly good to see coming up. Yeah. Terrific. Definitely. Thank you. So shifting over to the Biden administration, you know, the first 100 days are behind us. So, you know, how is reality aligned with expectations for the transition period?
Yeah. So I think that President Biden campaigned on, trying to, a couple of major points, you know, related to jumpstarting the economy and obviously better addressing the COVID-19 pandemic and the crisis that was kind of before us. So I think that he has begun to do largely a lot of the things that he talked about on the campaign trail. You know, back in March of this year, the administration, in conjunction with Congress, really spearheaded the American Rescue Plan. That was another kind of economic stimulus package, $1.9 trillion that, you know, tried to speed up the recovery, both on the economic and kind of the healthcare end of things. So I think that was, again, was a big accomplishment for the Biden administration. You know, what we've gotten over the past couple of weeks as well is more indication in terms of his long-term agenda in that was kind of encapsulated in the president's budget blueprint that we got just a couple of weeks ago. So there were provisions in there, you know, related to a lot of the spending that's included in their planning. Also the idea around the American Jobs Plan, and that's the infrastructure package that The president and White House have been kind of working on kind of devising. That is a $2.3 trillion package that's going to include some health provisions, but again, how infrastructure is defined is a big thing. Also, the American Families Plan, which is going to provide an investment in children and families that is tagged at about $1.8 trillion. But then there's also smaller provisions in the president's budget related to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and kind of discretionary funding within the CDC budget for kind of increasing and supporting the core public health capacity in states and territories and modernizing the public health data collection nationwide. There's also money in the president's vision and the budget related to the Department of Veterans Affairs EHR modernization project. So I think these are all things that are kind of important when we think about some of the things that he talked about on the campaign trail, again, but also things that are front of mind when we think of his priorities. One last thing that I'll mention about the budget really quickly is, you know, the Office of the National Coordinator, we at HIMSS and the kind of health IT community writ large spend a lot of time working with the Office of the National Coordinator. Mm-hmm. I will say that their budget has been kind of stuck at $60 or $62 million, and that's million and M.
Yes, it has.
Several years.
Yep.
What we saw in this president's budget was actually an increase of about $25 million or 40%. Up to $87 million for the ONC budget. So it's kind of an exciting indication of where ONC fits into the kind of broader agenda of the Biden administration. And I think that they are trying to position ONC to really be a centerpiece of a lot of their health reform initiatives that they have under.
That's excellent. Yes, no, we've seen that be stagnant for many years. And so that's actually very encouraging. What about, going into some of the congressional, do you see any congressional bills moving? That's certainly what the administration is thinking about and what they're probably going to move forward with. But what do you see from Capitol Hill, from any legislative components?
Now, I think, there are, I think, several things under development in terms of related to some of the coverage expansion that the President Biden talked about on the campaign trail, some of his provisions. Mm-hmm. There are bills under development related to kind of lowering the Medicare eligibility age, to 60 years old. So those between 60 and 64 would be eligible for kind of applying for Medicare coverage, which, you know, can be a big help for folks that are in between jobs or, looking for kind of stronger coverage. There's also things that the president talked about related to, kind of a public option plan. And I think those are points of emphasis that we will see from the administration over the next several months. Mm-hmm. This last week, we got the Affordable Care Act actually survived its third Supreme Court challenge.
Yep.
And I think that was kind of a pivot point for the administration. So, after surviving three Supreme Court challenges, it's unlikely that there will be many other challenges brought before the court related to the Affordable Care Act. So I think we can safely say that all the coverage provisions and everything related to the ACA are firmly in place. So this is, a pivot point to kind of begin to talk about how we try to maybe enhance some of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act, but also build on some of these coverage expansion points that the president and his team have been making over the past many months.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. So, as we look to, the administration and what their rep, as they're going to do to wrap up their year one, what recommendations are you guys making? Usually we roll into the annual conference with a handful of recommendations from HIMSS and the HIMSS leadership and the work group. So what are your thoughts there?
Yeah. So there is a new request for information from the White House Office of Management and Budget that focuses specifically on equity issues. Equity is one of those things that we as a nation have been spending the past year plus really talking about into broader societal issues and COVID-19. It's kind of equity has impacted us in a lot of different ways. So what the Office of Management and Budget is asking for is more information from stakeholder groups, and HIMSS is going to be commenting on this, you know, related to how government programs could be better shaped to kind of deliver services and make sure that underserved communities are being being served appropriately by the government. So this is not specifically focused on healthcare, but it is something where the Biden team wants information, and we will gladly contribute some ideas related to broadband access. You know, that is a social determinant of health, and making sure that broadband access kind of reaches all communities across America, I think is an important piece. Sure. And there's also health literacy and digital health literacy that we are planning on kind of making in our comment letter.
Excellent.
Quickly, the last thing that I will say is I think that also the idea around value-based care and the push from volume to value is, going to be something that will be prominent on the Biden administration's agenda. You know, just over the past couple of weeks, we've been hearing from Liz Fowler, who is going to be the new director of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation at CMS. Yes. And she has been kind of talking about some of the ways that they are thinking about value-based care. And I think some of the provisions that were implemented during the Trump administration from CMS's administrator at the time, Seema Verma, are going to be holdovers in terms of the patient being at the center of care and making sure that we're delivering high value care to every community in America. You know, we do have a new confirmed administrator, Chiquita Brooks-LaSure at CMS. We haven't heard too much from her up to this point because she was just confirmed a couple of weeks ago, but I suspect that we'll be hearing more from her about how the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services can use its policy levers to make sure that we are delivering the best possible value and the best possible outcomes to patients.
Excellent. Terrific. Love it. And for those just tuning in, we're speaking with Jeff Coughlin, Senior Director of HIMSS Government Relations. So let's talk, you know, keep on, you know, the discussion here on the ONC, because that's a significant component to a lot of actually my show last year, to be honest. So it's, you know, to see some of these provisions being enhanced. You know, what have you observed in the past 2 months with the compliance timelines?
As I mentioned, I think that we are in kind of a trial period. The enforcement piece is not in place. So what's required right now of all the four regulated actors that I mentioned previously is compliance with the information blocking provisions. However, there's really no enforcement mechanism in place just yet. So it is a trial period for those regulated actors to figure out how they could go about how they will go about implementing information blocking. So I think that organizations are taking this kind of trial period and continuing to kind of educate their staffs about information blocking. You know, we have 8 exceptions to the information blocking rules that all of the regulated actors can kind of avail themselves of if there is not an opportunity to broadly share information. And it's important to emphasize that's a default that we're talking about here, is that information should flow broadly across the entire healthcare ecosystem.
Excellent.
I think organizations are also looking at updating their privacy and information security policies in this kind of time period as they figure out the enforcement piece. And also, you know, looking at revising their release of information and data sharing practices. So those are all things that are really underway from on the ONC side. And I'll just mention really quickly that there's also the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services piece of the interoperability regulation. So CMS had a whole other regulation related to conditions of participation and patient access application programming interface, API,
yep.
provider directory, API. So these are all things that are being implemented from the CMS as we speak, not specifically focused information blocking, but focused on interoperability more broadly. And I think our important pieces as we think about the interoperability data exchange puzzle.
That's terrific. Good. So let's, you mentioned obviously COVID-19 and some of the administration's focus on that. And, but regarding healthcare and obviously our industry, you know, how has this pandemic, you know, infected or, you know, influenced major policy in the country? And, you know, what changes should we be thinking about to implement?
So I think one of the big things that we've learned over the past year plus has been about the importance of telehealth and remote patient monitoring. You know, there were several regulatory flexibilities that were implemented by the Trump administration and Congress early in the kind of beginning of the pandemic to make telehealth more available through different means to patients. Patients haven't kind of embraced the idea of telehealth and like the delivery of telehealth in a lot of different instances. However, when the public health emergency officially ends, which could happen later this year, could happen next year, it's a little unclear at this point. But once the public health emergency ends, some of those regulatory flexibilities are ended. So what we have been kind of pushing for on an advocacy basis has been kind of making these regulatory flexibilities around telehealth permanent. Yep. So that we can continue to offer that as an option to patients going forward. So I think that is one of those policy implications will continue to be a part of our agenda. It's part of an agenda of a lot of other organizations. Mm-hmm. The other thing related to COVID that I think that we've learned a lot about is the kind of importance of public health data infrastructure and whether our data systems at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and other HHS agencies is aligned and not siloed moving forward in terms of how information kind of flows on a public health basis from the local and the state-based public health agencies up to the federal government. And the reporting that happens has been helpful, but I think that the pandemic has really shined a light on how we can kind of do this better as a nation. So public health data infrastructure is one of those things that's very high on our advocacy agenda as well. Mm-hmm. We have been working with a lot of other groups on a campaign at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention within Congress about modernizing public health surveillance and looking for appropriations dollars related to different advocacy campaigns. So I think that's something that will continue to be kind of an important thing. And yeah. There's also a recognition on kind of the workforce mm-hmm. and making sure that all of our different public health agencies, again, at the federal, state, mm-hmm. local, tribal, territorial levels have the appropriate workforce to be able to collect this data, interpret this data on kind of impending public health threats. So that's something that we are kind of looking very closely at.
Yeah, we've seen that. We you know, COVID exposed that for sure. And we've got to be better ready for a pandemic in the future. So right. I applaud you for that right. work. It's great.
Yeah, and I'll just say really quickly that I think that's one of the other things in terms of creating a feedback loop for information on kind of what's worked in addressing COVID-19, you know, at different levels of government, what hasn't worked, how we can do better going forward. It's almost akin to kind of what we talk about related to the learning health system.
Yep,
where there's rapid learning and rapid dissemination of that information that's kind of built into the system. So I think that those are all things that when we finally do are at a point in our response to COVID-19 where we can kind of look back at again what worked, what didn't work. Those will be things that are front and center for everyone to kind of consider. How do we do better next time?
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, I also want to applaud you for your leadership around telehealth. I mean, it's, you know, I've read every position that HIMSS has put out there. Contributed to them many years ago, but even as of recently, seeing what you guys have created and read, and I'm grateful for what you guys are doing. It's the right care strategy for a lot of providers. Patients deserve it. They deserve that access. We need more access like that. So it's just great to see you guys on the front tip of that leadership nationally and even globally, but certainly here.
Thank you.
You got it. So we have about probably lightning round of 30 seconds, but maybe just a couple of words. What trends should we be thinking about? What even buzzwords should we be thinking about over the next 12 to 18, 24 months in healthcare? What's coming?
So over the past couple of weeks, the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy and the National Science Foundation have formed a new task force related to artificial intelligence.
Oh, cool.
And they're going to work on a roadmap for expanding access to the resources and the tools that will spur kind of AI innovation and economic prosperity nationwide. So that's something that I think will be front and center for our members and for HIMSS as an organization to see how we can better advise this new AI task force. And I'll say in terms of an agenda item for us with Congress is broader privacy related legislation. You know, we do have some changes underway related to HIPAA within the current HIPAA statute, but there are broader changes that people have been talking about related to kind of individual privacy, maybe in line with what's happening in the European Union related to the General Data Protection Regulation, the GDPR. Yep. Those are some of the things that I think will be high on the agenda within Congress and with us as we think about more broadly about patient privacy, individual privacy, beyond the information blocking rules, beyond. Yep.
Jeff, thank you so much, my friend. We are at time, but great to have you on air again. And I look forward to seeing you in August at the HIMSS annual conference. And thank you everyone for joining us today. Please tune in weekdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. As always, you can track me on Twitter at HIT Advisor and use the hashtag ThisJustinRadio so we can respond to your comments from the show. Also, again, if you're going to be out at HIMSS annual conference in Las Vegas, please stop by. We look forward to seeing you. We'll be broadcasting live on Wednesday, August 11th, starting at 9:30 a.m. Pacific, booth 3700. So please join us. Thanks, everyone. Have a terrific day. Stay safe.